Thank you all for coming today. And as I start, I just want to explain what you have on your tables. Does everybody have the little packet with the slips of paper in front of them? You will need those. So you're going to have that, and then you have an index card on your table. That index card is just so as I speak, if you have questions, you can just jot them down, because if you're like me, if I don't, I forget them, and then I wished I had remembered them. So if you'll just jot them down, at the end we'll collect them, and then we can have a Q&A period, and I'll go through those questions. Can everybody hear okay? Okay. So for the people who are going to watch this when it's being recorded, they're not going to actually get the benefit of the interactive exercise, but from your home, if you just want to get 12 little pieces of paper, you can do it as you listen to this recording. But for everyone who's here, I want to first tell you that I'm going to have you spread out those 12 pieces of paper in front of you in a minute. You're first going to, I'm going to tell you to write certain things on them, okay? And then I'm going to have you spread them out once they're all written down. The first thing I want you to do with the first three pieces of paper is I want you to write on them something you like about yourself, some quality you have, whether you're beautiful, you're smart, you're funny, you're tall, you're kind. Just three qualities about yourself that you really admire or other people admire. One on each piece of paper. Oh my goodness. On the next three pieces of paper, I want you to write down something that you own that means a lot to you. It could be a wedding ring, it can be your house, it could be a cookie jar, it could be a pet. Any of those, just three of the most important things that you own. On the next three pieces of paper, I want you to write down a hobby or an activity that you enjoy. Could be knitting, skiing, taking a hot bubble bath, reading a book, just three activities that you enjoy. And then on the last three pieces of paper, I want you to write down the names of people you love. Now, you can put on their children, as a one group, or parents, or whatever. So three names of people you love, but they can be just like your children or your grandchildren, however you want to do that. Once you finish doing this, I want you to sit all 12 pieces of paper in front of you so you can see them. And I want you to know that these are not going to be shared with anyone, so please, keep them to yourself. And I want you to take a moment to just look at what you've written down and realize that what you have in front of you, these 12 things, are the most important things in your life at this time. So is everybody finished? Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story. And as we go through the story, at different places in the story, I'm going to pause and I'm going to ask you to select two of those items that are the very most important to you and tear them up. Okay? So here we go. I want you to close your eyes for a minute and think. Think about the home or apartment where you live. Look at your kitchen, living room, and bathroom. Think about the colors in your home. Look in your closet. Look at all your clothes. Look in your drawers, at all the things you have. Look at your walls and the items you have hanging on them. Think of a typical day in your life. What would you like to do in your spare time? What hobbies do you have? Or what hobbies do you plan to start when you have time? Where do you go? Do you belong to any groups? What makes you happy, sad, mad? Now imagine your typical nursing home rooms. How is it arranged? What is on the walls? What color is it? How big is the closet? How many drawers does each resident have to fill? Think about the activities in the facility. How often each day is something going on? Do the activities on the calendar sound like fun? Would you go? Is there laughter? Imagine you live alone in an apartment. You work, drive, go out to dinner with your friends. You play bunco or bridge with a club that meets twice a month. You enjoy crocheting and making quilts. You are a 40-year member of your church and attend a Bible study class once a month. You love to shop, especially when you can hit the sales. You enjoy being independent. You like to get up at 5 a.m., sit by the window, read the paper, and watch the sun come up before you get ready to go for work. You have a cat that you pamper and adore. Your children and grandchildren join you most Sundays for lunch after church. You enjoy sitting with your grandchildren when you can. Lately, you've noticed that you get short-tempered with your children and grandchildren. They seem to move too fast and talk to you, not to you. Talk at you, not to you. You can't always follow the conversation. They lose your patience with you frequently and start to question everything that you do. Now, you can open your eyes if you still haven't closed. You have 20 seconds to look at those 12 most important things in your life, pick two of them, and tear them up and just sit them on, put them to the side. As time goes on, you find it hard to concentrate and follow what people are saying to you. You forget to go to your bunko or bridge club. You miss church on Sundays because you forgot what day it was. You ask your son to come over because your TV quit working. He says you have the remote control all messed up. Your cat seems to follow you around and meow constantly, and you don't know why. Your son says you are forgetting to give him food or water. Your children take you to a specialist who asks you questions for hours. You get x-rays of your head and all sorts of other tests. After several days, you are told you have Alzheimer's disease. You hear the words, but it doesn't mean much to you. Your children have tears in their eyes as they leave the office. You have 20 seconds to pick two more items and tear them up. You go back home. Your children and grandchildren seem to be coming or going all the time. They look in the cabinets, open the refrigerator, look in your bathroom and laundry room. It makes you angry, and you argue with them frequently. They tell you they're just trying to help you, but you remind them that you don't need their help. One morning, your children and grandchildren come to your house. They tell you they're taking you out for lunch and sightseeing. After lunch, they take you to a building. When you enter, you realize it's a nursing home. A lady escorts you through the building through some doors that close tightly behind you. You go into a room. Your children tell you they don't believe you can live alone anymore. They think the best place for you is this nursing home. Your children tell you not to worry. They've checked it out and believe you will love it here. You worry about your cat. You feel the need to pray, and you can't go to church. Your children tell you that your cat is not welcome here, and they remind you that they will take care of everything. You have 20 seconds to tear up two more pieces of paper. Your children ask you to go to the office and sign admission papers. Two people you don't know examine you, talking to each other all the time. They take off your clothes and inspect your body for open sore areas. It is humiliating. You get angry and try to push them away. They tell you dinner will be served in an hour. Then they leave you alone. You look around. You find a small bag of clothes, but you don't recognize them. You have trouble remembering where you are and what you are doing here. You wonder where your cat is, if your cat's okay. You are frightened and alone. You have now lived in the facility for 2 months. Your family visits when they can. They are busy, and though sometimes they can only stay for a very short time, they seem to talk to you, not with you. They have changed so much. Sometimes you struggle to recognize them. They don't always wait for your response when you ask a question. Even though the administrator said it was okay, your family has not brought the cat to visit. You have a vague memory of a place you used to live. People come to visit you, but you have trouble remembering names and faces. You can't remember what day it is or what month or year it is. Just a few short months ago, you were living alone, independent, playing with your cat, spending time with your grandchildren, going to church, playing cards, crocheting and making quilts. Today you have no choice about when you eat and most of the time about what you eat. You are embarrassed about your appearance because sometimes the staff is too busy or forgets to help you comb your hair. You are told when to get up and when to go to bed. The staff says, "We have to get you to bed, whether you are tired or not." The staff offer, but they are very confusing. Activities are offered, but they can be confusing too. Sometimes you have to wander when something is going on, but you become restless and you can't seem to sit for very long. Plus, you don't understand most of what is being said to you. Staff doesn't always have time to help you understand. Even though you are forgetful and having trouble thinking through, how do you think you feel about your life in this facility? What would make it better for you? Who still visits? Who do you wish would visit? What do you wish you could say to them? What do you wish they would say to you? You have 20 seconds to tear up 2 more pieces of paper. You enjoyed being independent. You liked to get up at 5 a.m. and sit by the window, read the paper, and watch the sun come up before you got ready for work. You are labeled as depressed, difficult, and stubborn because sometimes you refuse when a staff member tries to make you do something against your will. It's not that you are stubborn. You just don't understand what they're saying to you. You prefer to stay in your room alone most of the time. You just can't seem to grasp what is happening around you. You would like to play cards. If you could find a deck, you could shuffle and deal, but can't remember what those marks on the card stand for. You tried to go to some other activities, but they moved too fast and you couldn't follow. You have a TV, but the staff turns on programs that mean nothing to you. People talk at you, which makes you angry. Sometimes you take a swing at people because you can't find the words to tell them what is wrong. And they keep picking at you. twice they have called your doctor and asked for something to help you relax so you won't be so combative. When you refuse the medication, the staff member gets frustrated with you and they leave the room in a huff. Your life is confusing. You have a minute when you remember something, but you can't seem to hold the thought. You are sad, but you can't figure out why. You are happy when your children come to visit, but you don't always remember who they are, but you know you love them and they love you. You have 20 seconds to tear up two more pieces of paper. Now look at the two remaining pieces of paper you have and realize that you have lost everything else that was so important to you, and this is all you have left. This is all you can remember. So I want you to take those two pieces of paper and I want you to put them face down on the table and I want you to shuffle them around so you don't know what is what. And then, Carla, somebody was going to go around the room. Oh, right here. You were going to go around. And I want you all to just pick one piece of paper from in front of each person. Don't look at it. Just pick it up and collect them. Of the two. Mm-hmm. So you don't know which one they're taking. And no peeking. Yeah, you can start down here. Yeah, Carla's really getting into this. So take those pieces of paper the two of you have and just tear them up. Okay. They're gone. So now everybody should just have one piece of paper in front of them. So I want you to turn it over and look at it. And this is the last memory you have of your life. Everything else is gone. Okay? Look around the room. This is your life. Think about the possessions you have lost. What do you miss the most? Look around the room where you live in this facility. Think about the things you used to enjoy doing. What do you miss the most? Think about your family and friends. Think for a moment what it would be like to look at your children and not remember who or she was or that they belong to you. Think about a moment in your life when you went into a room to get something and couldn't remember what you wanted. Or a time when you met someone who seemed to know you. That happened today. And you can't remember his or her name or where you met them. How would that make you feel? Now, take that last piece of paper and tear it up. It is gone. Your memory is trapped inside. While you may have moments when a thought breaks through, most of the time you can't remember the details of who you are, what kind of a person you are, or your life. Why get out of bed tomorrow morning? What is the purpose of your life now? Why didn't you die instead of being diagnosed with this horrible disease? So that's the exercise part. So I want to ask a few questions. What was the easiest thing to give up? She said the material possessions. Is that pretty much true?
Yes.
Yeah. Why?
Because they're
replaceable? Yeah, because they're replaceable. What was the hardest thing to give up?
Family.
The family, the people. And why is that?
They have always
lived
the most.
Right. They have a personal connection to you. Can you imagine not recognizing your child or spouse? What feelings might you have if you didn't know who your husband or wife was, or if you didn't know the name of your child? I can remember when my grandmother was in a nursing home, my dad would go to visit his mom, and I would go see her. And she would say, who was that white-haired man who came to see me? Well, that was her son. And she had no idea. She knew she was comfortable around him. She knew him, but she didn't know that he was her son. Would you be angry, sad, depressed, or scared if you didn't know who the person in front of you was and they told you, I'm your child? No, you're not my child. You know, I don't know, So this is the interactive part of the exercise. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to do some educational talk on how to work with somebody who is showing signs of dementia. And the first thing I need to clarify for people is that dementia is not a normal part of aging, okay? I work with people over 100 whose memory is better than mine. It is not a normal part of aging. So there's always a big question on what is the difference between forgetfulness and dementia. I'm so glad you asked. And I was going to try to explain it to you. However, I found a really good video. It's 7 minutes long, and it's by Topeka Snow, who is a fabulous speaker on dementia. I've been to many of her workshops, although if you go to her workshops, just know she is going to pick on every person there and make them participate. So, and she'll tell you that. But I'm going to show you this video. It's just about around 8 minutes, but it's a very good explanation of the difference between forgetting something and having dementia. So let me, can everybody see this screen okay? No. Okay. If you can't move to see it, really you just need to hear it because she's just standing there kind of, you know. So that is a really good example of the difference between dementia and, just a minute, my hearing aids are on Bluetooth. So that's a good example between dementia and forgetfulness. So what I'm going to do now is talk about tips and clues of things that you can do to help you work with somebody who has dementia. So the first thing you have to know is you hear the term dementia all the time. Everybody's talking about dementia. Dementia is just an umbrella term. Underneath the umbrella is first Alzheimer's, because it's the most common type of dementia. But it's just one type of dementia. But it's what most people hear about. But it's kind of important to know what type of dementia someone has, because the treatment is different. People with Alzheimer's have problems with short-term memory. But boy, their long-term memory is right on target. But their short-term is gone, okay? Other types of dementia don't really have a whole lot of problem with short-term memory, but they have other issues. So probably the second most common that I hear about is vascular dementia. And vascular dementia is caused by strokes or mini strokes, TIAs. But there's also Lewy bodies. Lewy bodies, if somebody has Lewy bodies, that is a tough diagnosis. Because typically with Lewy bodies, you have aggressive behaviors and other things that you have to work around. So there's also the frontal temporal, such as Pick's disease, and some of the dementias that people get younger, you know, between, you know, they can get it as early as 45, have a dementia. These dementias are typically, when you get it younger, are a hereditary link. So that's one way you know. But professionals, it depends on who you talk to, will say there's between 100 and 400 different types of dementia. Because there's dementias that are connected to certain diseases, like Parkinson's has a dementia. People who are who have abused drugs can have a dementia, or alcohol can have a dementia. There are all different types of dementia. So it's important to know what type, because if your loved one has Pick's disease and you're treating them like they have Alzheimer's, then you're going to get really frustrated when they're not responding the way you think they should respond. So the way you determine that is when you start to see these things, you need to have them evaluated by a neurologist, because a neurologist is the only one who can determine what type of dementia somebody has. And I do a lot of training to nursing home staff and to staff in assisted living. And the first thing I tell them, because they're always calling me and saying, oh, you know, Cheryl's having behavior problems again. And I say, oh, no, no, no. Cheryl does not have behavior problems. People with dementia do not have behavior problems. They have problems with communication. They no longer have the words to tell you what's going on. So sometimes it comes out in a, quote, behavior. But they don't have behavior problems. They just need you to anticipate what is going on and meet the need. So we're going to talk about, and a good example of that is somebody with if somebody with Alzheimer's or any dementia has to go to the bathroom, but they're not processing, hey, I have to go to the bathroom. So instead, they get really fidgety. They may be crossing their legs. They get really agitated. They start pacing rapidly because they have to go to the bathroom, but they don't have those words to tell you. They don't even recognize that. So it can come out in other ways. So we're going to talk about some of that. They may wander in rooms because they're looking for something. So we're going to talk about wandering. Wandering is a big issue for people with dementia. But I have to tell you, when somebody is wandering, they're always looking for something. There's always a reason that they are wandering. And we have got to figure it out what they're trying to tell us. So I'm going to give you a few examples. I had a gentleman in a skilled nursing home that every day at 2 o'clock tried to elope. And now my mom thought he was getting married every day, but said no, in a nursing home that means he's trying to leave. So every day at 2 o'clock he tried to leave. So as many nursing homes do, they'll call me and say, Cheryl, we got a big problem with so-and-so. You need to figure this out. So I asked him, I said, well, tell me, what was this man's job? And they said, well, that's crazy. What does that have to do with him leaving the facility every day at 2 o'clock? I said, oh, just humor me. Call the family, find out what his job was. They called me back. They said he was a used car salesman. I said, okay, now call them back again and ask them what he did at every day at 2 o'clock as a used car salesman. They said, okay. So they called me back. They said, well, that was strange. They told me that every day at 2 o'clock was his turn to check the lot. So see, this man wasn't trying to elope. He was doing his job. So what I told the staff to do is to call one more time and ask for the names of his coworkers. So they did, and they called back and they said, John, Bill, and Steve. I said, fine. Every day at 1:45, go up to this man and say, today Steve is going to check the lot. You don't need to do that. And the behavior stopped because we found out what he was trying to do. He wasn't trying to leave the facility. He didn't need to be discharged because he was an elopement risk. The man was doing his job. Okay? Another example was a lady who was on a memory care unit, and she just started pacing very aggressively. And I happened to be in the building that day, and they paged me and said, could you come to the memory unit? And they said, we don't know what to do. She's super, super upset, and we don't know why. So I immediately walked up to this lady and just matched her pace up and down the hall. She was pretty fast. So up and down the hall we went. And then I looked at her and I said, hey, you know, what is your name? And she told me, and I said, you know, what's wrong? And she said, the teacher will not let me back in school. I said, really, what grade are you in? And she said, I'm in third grade. So that kind of told me how far back she had digressed. So my next question is, well, why won't the teacher let you in school? She said, because my hands are dirty. I said, well, let me see your hands. So she took her hands out of her pocket, and they were caked with dry stool. And I looked at her. I said, you know what? I know somebody that can fix that for you. So I took her, not by the hand, obviously, but I took her up to the nurse's station, and I asked the nurses to soak her hands. And they did. And I came back on the unit 10 minutes later, and she was sitting at a table talking to some other residents. So again, it's all about figuring out what they are trying to tell us, because they cannot process. They are no longer living in our reality. And nothing we do or say is going to make them come back to our reality. We have to enter their world and ask questions that they can understand. And sometimes that means asking the same question many different ways until they connect to what you're asking. And my friends tell me often, my coworkers will say, you enter their world great. You're not so good about coming out. So, the next thing I kind of want to talk to you a little bit about is that, you know, like I said, there's always a reason for behaviors. So some of the tips when you work with somebody, you have to ask questions, like I said, in a way that they can understand. So I got called when I worked with the Ombudsman program. We didn't really, it's on my biography there, but I was the director of the Ombudsman program, which is now called VOICE, for 17 years. And the Ombudsman are the federally mandated advocates for people in nursing homes, assisted living, and residential care facilities. So, but the only time people would call us is if they had a complaint, okay? So we would get calls from families, from residents, about a third of my calls came from staff saying, hey, you know, we need your help. So one of the things I did with the Ombudsman was I was the co-founder of the SERVE Project. And the SERVE Project was an acronym for Serving Elderly Residents Who Are Victims of Crime. So when there was an allegation of abuse in a nursing home, the state of Missouri would contact me, and I would go out and assess the resident for trauma. And then I would provide victim services for that resident and their family, because the family was also considered a victim. So one such case I went to a facility, and as soon as I walked in, believe me, the facilities know who I am. Okay, so as soon as I walked in the door, the director of nursing came up and said, what are you here for, Cheryl? And I said, well, I'm here on a for the state of Missouri on an allegation of abuse to do an assessment on this lady. Oh, you don't need to worry. She's fine. She's just fine. I said, well, you know, I drove all the way out here, so I might as well visit her. So I went to see this lady, and she was in her room. And mind you, all on the shelf next to her were dolls. Okay, so I sat down, and when I was assessing someone for trauma from abuse, I didn't sit down and say, okay, who hit you or whatever. You know, I just talked to them to see if they bought it up to me, to see if it was still something that was bothering them. So I talked to her for a short period of time, and she said that she was worried that her children were going to get kicked out of school. Now, mind you, her children are all these dolls that are sitting on the shelf behind her. And I said, well, you know, why would your children get kicked out of school? And she said, because I'm afraid, because of what they hear. I'm afraid if they repeat what they hear, that they're going to be kicked out of school. And I'm scared that they're going to be kicked out of school. And I said, well, are you still hearing these things? And she said, yes. And I said, I am so sorry that you are still hearing these things. And I'm going to talk to the nursing staff and make sure that you don't hear these things anymore. So what I did was I went back and talked to the nursing staff, and I found out that what had happened was that a staff person, and this is one of those things that just is like scratching on a chalkboard to me, had been on her cell phone, and she was outside this resident's door, and she was talking to her boyfriend, and they got in a big fight over the phone, and this lady overheard what they said, and she was afraid that they were going to come and get her. So she was traumatized by that. And you have to understand that in the law, the definition of verbal abuse is anything said to a resident or within hearing distance of a resident that causes them harm. So when this lady heard this aide fighting with her boyfriend over the phone, she was afraid that she was mad at her and that her life was endangered. So she had no way to separate that. So it was really important to figure this out. And first of all, the staff should not be on their cell phones making personal calls to begin with. But this was right outside a woman's room who had dementia. Another example of verbal abuse is I had a postman went into a facility to drop off the mail. While he was there, he thought, oh, I had a friend who was just admitted to this assisted living. I'm going to go visit him. So he walked through the facility, and he never found him, and he got frustrated. So on his way out of the lobby, he mumbled a few choice words under his breath, and he left. Unbeknownst to him, there were two residents in the lobby who had some psychological issues. And when they heard him say that, they were afraid that he was going to come back and get them. So that met the definition of verbal abuse. So I actually went and met with these residents, and I went to the postmaster general of the town. And what we decided to do was to have the postman write letters of apology to these residents that when they got scared, they could read. Because they didn't have dementia. They had a mental illness. So they would read this, and then they felt safe again. So verbal abuse is very typical, and it's probably the most common type of abuse, and it's probably the hardest to recover from. Because I have never seen someone physically abused who wasn't also verbally abused at the same time. And words hurt. You know, bones do mend. Words can cut through a person's soul, and they never forget them, or they can't let go of them. So, you know, we want to talk about redirecting people with dementia. So let's say somebody has dementia and they're looking for their mother. What do you think the best thing to say to them at that point is? Any ideas?
Where did you last see her?
Huh?
Where did you last see
Where did you last see her?
How about she went shopping?
She went shopping. Those are both appropriate answers. What you don't want to say, which is what facilities used to always say, is, how old are you? How old would that make your mother? Do you really think they're alive? And congratulations, you have just allowed them to grieve the initial loss of their mother over and over and over every time you say that. That is, reality orientation does not work with people with dementia because their reality is not our reality. They cannot process or rationalize our reality anymore. We have to live in their reality when we work with them. So instead of saying, is your mother alive? Say, tell me about your mother. What was your favorite thing to do with your mother? Because when they're looking for their mother, they're thinking about their mother. So let's talk about your mother. Let's have that conversation. And it'll pass, but they may really enjoy talking. Because remember, most of them with the Alzheimer's still have the long-term memory. So they can talk about their favorite things they did with their mother. So that's one really good way to deal with that. Now, I'm going to talk about for families. We have to learn to laugh, okay? Don't be so darn serious. They're not. Why are we? Why are we so offended when they say something or do something? So I've got several examples for you. My first one is probably my favorite, and that was Zelma. Zelma was in a skilled nursing home. She is in a wheelchair, and she would constantly roam in and out of people's rooms, making them madder than a wet hen at her. And so one day, and this is when I worked as an aide and a certified med tech in a home. So one day I'm walking down the hall, and she's wheeling out of one of her rooms, and I hear the resident who's supposed to be in the room yell at her and say, Zelma, you just go to hell. And my lady, as she's wheeling herself out, looks over her shoulder and she says, you know, I've been there and I don't like the way you run it. And she just keeps going. Did not faze her at all. And I looked at Zelma, I said, you know, Zelma, if anyone ever tells me to go to hell, that's what I'm telling them. You know? I'm still waiting, but I can't wait to say it. So I thought, wow, what? How good is that? So I wasn't laughing. I was laughing with her, you know. So another example is I was on a memory care unit to see somebody, and this man whom I was not there to see comes strolling up to me, and he says, do you know what today is? I am so excited. Do you know what today is? Now, you have to know I have staff on both sides of me because a lot of times when I go in facilities, staff are with me. So I have staff on both sides of me. I said, no, what is today? He said, today at 2 o'clock, I am being cremated and I cannot wait. And now, mind you, the staff on both sides of me are going, you know. I said, really? I said, well, happy cremation day to you. He said, well, thank you. And off he goes as happy as a lark. And the staff are staring at me saying, why would you say that? I said, what would you say? Are you going to shame him and tell him, are you crazy? Do you know what that means? He doesn't know what that means. Whatever this man is thinking of is making him very happy. Why would you destroy that and bring him down? I won't do that. I don't know what he was thinking of, but whatever it was brought him great joy. He came to me happy. He left me happy. It doesn't matter. I know he's not being cremated at 2 o'clock. I don't need to make an issue of that. So, what? So, you know, you just have to learn when something like that happens, don't take offense to it. Don't be offended. No one's trying to upset you or offend you. So the other thing is I heard this man speak. This guy he's retired now, but he was the prosecutor in Los Angeles who first started the elder abuse program in Los Angeles. And I've heard him talk twice. And he talks about his life at 25 and how his life changed when he was 65. Now, don't try to write this down. I've got them all on the handouts for you. But he said in 1979, when he was 25, he had long hair. In 2019, when he was 65, he was longing for hair. At 25, he enjoyed kegs of beer. At 65, he had EKGs. At 25, he liked acid rock. At 65, it was acid reflux. At 25, it was stems and seeds. At 65, it's fiber. At 25, he's hoping for a BMW. And at 65, he's hoping for a BM. At 25, he's going to a new hip joint. And at 65, he's getting a new hip joint. At 25, he enjoyed Rolling Stones. At 65, it was Kidney Stones. 25 was disco. 65 is Costco. And 25 is whatever. And 65 is Depends. So, you know, we have to make light of this stuff. You know, it's okay. You know, young people are always texting, okay? BFF for a young person is best friends forever. When you're a senior, BFF, best friend fell. You know, so there's a whole list of senior texting too. So I want to talk about, you know, when people repeat themselves. This seems to bother families more than anything. They repeat themselves over and over and over. I worked with a lady who was 101 who played the piano at Payne Baptist Church. And that's all she ever talked about was she played the piano at Payne Baptist Church. And it drove her family crazy. I said, look, be glad she's talking about playing the piano at Payne Baptist Church, because many seniors are fixated on their bowel and bladder program, you know. So I will talk to a new client, and within 15 minutes, I know all their bowel and bladder problems. I thought, you know, we could have started a little less personal, but I know it all. So for whatever, we don't know why people fixate on what they do, but it's very common for people with dementia to fixate on certain things. There's nothing that you can say or do that is going to change that. You're just going to have to learn to either redirect them by bringing up another topic or something, or just, you know, learn to live with that, because that's just not going to stop. So the one thing I really want to talk about is that we have to learn to pick our battles. Not everything that they say or do, even if it's not right, needs to be battled out. So basically what I tell people, if the person with dementia is if what they are doing is not causing harm to themselves or someone else, let it go. Because it's only driving you crazy. It's not bothering them at all. I talked to a lady yesterday who was just livid because her mother insists on dressing herself and her clothes don't match. I said, so what? Why do they have to match? Well, because if she goes out in public, I said, you know what? If she goes out in public, you know, first of all, you can lay her clothes out for her. However, that does not mean she will put them on. A lot of people like to wear the same clothes for 2 weeks and not change, you know. So it doesn't mean that she's going to do it, but that is your issue. That is not her issue. So if she doesn't, her clothes don't match, that's okay. So I was doing an in-service at a residential care facility, and this was a very small facility in Sullivan, Missouri. And I did their in-servicing every year on resident rights. And one of the staff people had a baby, and she was growing up, she'd come to work with her every day. So every year when I'd see, she'd be at these meetings, she'd be a little bit older. So one day when the girl was four, she was at the yearly meeting, and I was talking about letting everybody pick out their own clothes, you know, because that's a choice that we can make about our life, and the more choices we can give people, the more control of their life they feel, and the happier they're going to be. So after the in-service, her mother came up, and she goes, okay, Cheryl, we got a problem, because Taylor just heard you talk about their right to pick out their clothes, and now she wants to know why I pick out her clothes. So picking your battles. One of the most disturbing recent cases I had was a gentleman whose wife had pretty significant dementia and lived at home. And he would fight with her over not putting her dirty spoons in the dishwasher. That just really, really was his thing. And it really irritated him that she would not put the spoon in the dishwasher. I said, so get plastic spoons. Oh, no, no, no. She needs to put them in the dishwasher. Okay. So I got a call a little while later, and I went back out to see him. And I had found out that one day she got up and decided she would make them breakfast. So she made them some French toast. So they sat down to eat this French toast, and after one bite, he spits it out because apparently the bread was moldy. However, he didn't want to fight with her, so he let her eat it. So she ate the moldy French toast, and he did not. So my question to him is, why will you fight to the death over a dirty spoon, but you will let her eat moldy bread? He said, I just didn't want to fight with her. And I said, you have to learn to pick your battles. She could have gotten very sick from that. And my other question is, why do you have moldy bread in your kitchen anyway? Oh, you know, it's whatever. I said, you know, if you're going to be living with someone to mention, you have to prepare your home. You have to lock up the medicines. You have to make sure there's no moldy bread or that they can't get anything that could harm them. So, you know, that was a situation with this gentleman that we just could not agree on. And I said, you have got to learn to pick your battles, and you've got to give over the spoon thing. The spoon thing is all you. I'm sorry. So, you know, with my own mother, my mother is 80, now she'll tell me, 86 and a half. You know, when kids are really little, they have the half. But then when they hit about 80, the half comes back. So, and she told me, last year she told everybody she was 84. And I kept saying, you're 85. Oh, no, Cheryl, I'm 84. So I got out the phone and showed her. And I said, okay, let's go do your grocery shop. Oh, Cheryl, I could have done that at 84, but I cannot do that at 85. I said, Mother, get in the car. So, but one day I came, I'm her caregiver. I actually just moved from Creve Coeur to O'Fallon to be closer to her because I'm having to be out there more and more. So one day I went there, and I was making her some soup, so I opened up the microwave, and lo and behold, we have a light bulb in the microwave. I said, Mom, why is there a light bulb in the microwave? To which she says to me, well, Cheryl, it wasn't there before you came. Why would you put that in there? And everything inside of me wanted to fight that. And, of course, in my own mind, I'm thinking, you know, practice what you preach, practice what you preach. But I really wanted to argue that. But finally, I said, I don't know, Mom, but I've taken it out, and I won't put it back in there. So that could have been very devastating if she had started the microwave with a light bulb in it. But, you know, her immediate, that was not me. Why would you do that, Cheryl? And one thing you're going to find out is when people have dementia, there's usually one person that's the bad person. Everybody else is as good as gold. And I got that honor. And I had a long talk with the Lord about that. I said, I'm the one that does everything. I'm the dementia expert. Why me? So I finally have just decided he's trying to make me a better case manager, so I'm the fall guy for all this. But I tell you, it's not fun when it's you, okay? But there'll be someone in a family that pretty much gets blamed for everything, and everybody else is just as good as gold. And they're usually the people that aren't there nearly as much or doing the work. So anyway, you have to pick your battles. The other thing I want to let people know is do not resort to medication unless it's absolutely necessary. Now, I'm going to share an example with you, and I have to preface it by telling you this did not happen in Missouri, okay? But it's a perfect example of this. So there was a lady in a skilled facility who told the nurses that there were snakes in the ceiling. So, the nurses were so concerned about her because, you know, she's hallucinating. So they called the doctor and they got her on some really good antipsychotics. And 3 days later, a 9-foot bolt constrictor dropped out of the ceiling of the facility. And I said, well, then your only question is, she said, snakes, not snake, you know. But the thing is, that was not bothering her. She just made an observation, you know, there's snakes in the ceiling. They took it and ran with it. So, you know, when people with dementia have hallucinations, my grandmother would look at children. She'd talk about the color draining out of their face. Or she would see children picking up M&Ms off the floor and eating them. But it did not scare her. She was not afraid of any of that. So there was no need to medicate her because it didn't bother her in the least. My grandmother, who was in a facility in St. Louis, would tell people that she'd be looking out a window watching a baseball game at night. And you'd walk up to her, what you doing? I'm watching this baseball game. And you look out, it's just a parking lot full of cars. So, you know, if it's not bothering them, it does not need to be medicated. You do not want to medicate people if you don't have to. The more medication someone's on, the more likely they're going to work against each other. The other thing, when people are claiming to see or hear things, the first thing you need to do is if they wear hearing aids, make sure they're working. Make sure the batteries are correct. Because sometimes, I just got hearing aids last week. And, of course, I don't need them. I keep telling them I don't need them. But apparently, the audiologist said I had failed 3 hearing tests. And the staff at my office say I talk so loud. But I think they have the problem. But with the hearing aids, sometimes I would acknowledge that sometimes I'd be talking to someone and think, that makes no sense at all. They could not have possibly said what I heard. So sometimes when someone is responding to you and their response is off, it's not because they're confused. It's because they didn't really hear what you said. So it might be a good idea just to say, to repeat the question or something. Because a lot of people with hearing loss, like dementia, are not going to start a conversation by saying, I have a hearing problem. They're just going to say nothing and do the best that they can. The same is true for visual problems. I had a man in a facility who kept telling the staff that there was somebody that was crawling around his window at night. Well, there was a big tree outside his window. So what he was actually seeing was when it was windy, the branches would hit the window and scrape on the window, and he thought that somebody was trying to break in because he couldn't see the tree. So when somebody's hallucinating, you need to cross off the boxes first. Are they really hallucinating, or do they have a hearing problem or a visual problem? Their glasses need to be adjusted, or they do have a hearing hallucination problem. But is it a problem for them or is it a problem for you? So make that determination. We don't want to put any more medication on someone's plate than they absolutely have to have. So Let's see, other tips that I will give to people is, anytime you're working with someone with dementia, if they're not in danger of hurting themselves or someone else, walk away, let them calm down. I am just so amazed at how many facilities will try to force their will on someone else. You are taking your medicine now. You are taking your bath now. Do you know if you're in a long-term care facility, you can choose when to take your bath. You can choose when to get up and go to bed. You have a lot of choices that you can make. And a lot of times there's conflicts. It's because the staff is trying to force their will on the person. I am dealing with a lady, this is a brand new client of mine, I just talked to the daughter, and she said that her mom, who has significant dementia, that the facility says she's violent and she needs to go. And my first question is, well, let me ask you, is she only violent when they're providing personal care? Oh yeah, otherwise she's fine. I said, that's not a problem with your mother. That's a problem with how the staff are approaching your mother. Just think for a moment. If you have dementia and you don't know even who your own children are, and a staff person or a stranger, will say, comes up to you and decides you're taking a bath. So they come up to you, and what do? They don't say anything to you. They just start trying to unbutton your shirt. Well, what are you going to think, first of all, even if you don't have dementia, that's not appropriate, but if you do and they're doing that, you're going to think someone's trying to attack you. So it's fight or flight. So you're swinging. So in the infinite wisdom of staff in many facilities, the staff person goes out and says, Ms. Wilson is fighting me. So now what do? They send two people in to do it. So now instead of one person attacking me, I'm being attacked by two. So yeah, that does not go well. There are ways to work with people who have dementia who don't want to take a bath. Whether you have dementia or not, do you know that bathing is the number one refused item in long-term care facilities? More people refuse to take a bath than anything else, whether they have dementia or not. So if somebody with dementia is not wanting to take a bath, it's the staff approach. And first of all, you have to realize a lot of times when people don't want to do something, you're trying to do it while Jeopardy is on, okay? Their favorite TV show is when you have time to give them a bath. That's never going to work. I don't care. Even if you don't have dementia, you do not interrupt Jeopardy, okay? Because I'm going to get one question right this year, and it could be today. So I'm not taking a bath now. So, people are refusing things, even if it's your mother or dad at home, make sure it's not a time when they usually watch something or when they're expecting somebody to come or other things. There's a lot of ways you can do that. But if you have someone with dementia who's fighting to take a bath, there is a really good video you can get called Bathing Without a Battle. And it shows you them working with people who have significant dementia and how to calm them down before you get a bath. But the most important thing to do when you work with someone with dementia who's fighting for anything is to slow down. You need to slow way down. Don't try to give them a bath if you only have 6 minutes. It's not going to work. Slow down, walk in, get eye to eye with them, and talk to them first. And say, it's time to take your bath. And instead of just doing it, they cannot process. Do you know how many steps it takes to undress yourself? Just think about it. You have to unbutton your shirt. You have to pull your... There's a lot of things you do. They can't process that. So what you do is you start talking to them. You say, it's time to take your bath. I'm going to unbutton the top button of your shirt. And then just go down and say, can you help me get the sleeve out? And make them a part of it. But you have to start by connecting with the person. And sometimes if you cannot connect with that person, then some other staff person needs to be doing, or some other family member or home health group or whatever. There was a resident in a nursing home that I worked up. Her name was Agnes. was violent on a good day. But Agnes loved me. But Agnes always called me Harry, okay? And everybody said, why do you let her call you Harry? I said, I don't know why she calls me Harry, but there's someone in her life named Harry that I remind her of that she felt safe with. So she can call me whatever she wants. So one day there's a page over the intercom. Sure, I'll go to room whatever. And it was Agnes's room again. So when I went in there, she had basically like beat up a male aide so bad they had to send him out. And there were two nurses in the room, and they were just, and Agnes was just furious. And the second I walked in the room, Agnes looked at me and she said, oh, honey, you cannot believe what they're doing to me. And I looked at all the staff in the room, and I said, everybody out of this room, you all leave me and Agnes alone. And as soon as they left, I walked over to her and changed her clothes and put her in bed. She looked at me and she said, could you lay down here with me for a while? And you will find with people with dementia that they connect to certain people. And we don't know why. I don't know why Agnes connected with me, even though I was hairy. And I would walk in a room and see her getting ready to throw a fork at someone. Agnes, put that down. And if it was me, Harry, she would put it down. But if it's someone else, they were a target. So there's usually somebody, and find out who that person is. And if it's somebody who's only there once or twice a week, have that person give the bath. Why do seniors have to take a bath every day? It's not like they're really active, a lot of these people, you know. And, you know, a lot of seniors, you know, who are 80, 90 years old, didn't take a bath every day. Some of them took a bath once a week. So now why are we trying to impose our societal things that you have to have three baths a week or whatever? If they need it, they need it. You know, if they're incontinent, that's another whole thing. I had a family call me whose mom was, the policy of the facility was to give two baths a week. Well, their mom smelled every time she went in because she was incontinent. So they asked for three baths, to which she said, that's not our policy. We're only required to give two, which is not even true. The state law says you have to keep them clean and dry and free of body and mouth odor. And if you do that with two, fine. But if you need more, they have a right to have more. So I said, well, I'll talk to them. So when I called them, I just quoted the law to them, and she wound up getting a bath every day. So, you know, a lot of times if you have a loved one in an assisted living or a skilled facility, what they tell you when you come in is what their policies are, but oftentimes they violate federal law as far as the resident rights. That's what my book's about. If you have anyone in assisted living or long-term care, you need that book. It's the first book ever written that explains to families what their loved one's rights are in long-term care facilities according to the law. Then I give 64 examples, like I'm doing today, of cases I've worked with that show you how to do that. And I have chapters on how to red flags to look for. Anytime someone tells you it's a state law, you need to question it because it's probably their policy. And a facility policy cannot violate a resident's right. So we're about to open up for questions, but the best gift that you can give somebody with dementia is to give them as much control of their life as they can handle. And even someone with significant dementia can make some decisions. They can choose what they wear. They can choose what activities they go to. They can make some choices, and the more choices you give them, the happier they are, because we all want control of our life. Don't argue with them. Their reality is never going to change. We have to go into their reality now. We cannot push our reality on them. If they're doing something that you don't think is right, as long as it's not harming them or someone else, let it go. Pick your battles. The last thing I want to share with you is a cartoon, and I've got a picture of this cartoon on your handouts, but it's a nurse with her hands crossed looking down at a resident, and the resident is looking up with her, and she says, honey, I've been to Through two world wars, the Great Depression, taught 3,297 children, administered four elementary schools, and outlived every one of the pastors I've worked with. I'm 89 years old, and you're telling me it's bedtime. And you know, that is what we do to people with dementia or to seniors in general. We want to tell them what to do, when to do, whether they're in a facility or they're living with us at home. We think that we can tell them exactly what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. But what we have to learn is let them to continue to make as many decisions about their life as they can, because they'll be happier. And believe me, if they are happier, you are going to be happier. So I want to close by reading my latest poem that I wrote. And this applies to even people my age. And I had a conversation with a lady, she was in her early 90s, I think, and she was just so distraught because her children don't listen to her. They don't value her opinion. And she kept saying, I can still be valued. I can still make a difference. So I wrote this poem, and it's called I'm Not Done Yet. I may be 60, 70, 80, 90, or over 100, but I'm not done yet. My hair may be thin, gray, or I may have no hair at all. I'm looking at your pastor. But I'm not done yet. My vision may be lacking or may even be gone, but I'm not done yet. My hearing may be fading or I may not be able to hear you, but I'm not done yet. My bones may be brittle. I may walk with a limp, a cane, or I may be in a wheelchair, but I'm not done yet. My mind may fade in and out. I may forget things, but I'm not done yet. I do have life experience and the wisdom to know that life lessons are learned by the scars we carry and the valleys we go through. That's where we learn our greatest lessons. I have learned that you can't master loving people without experiencing grief. The greater we love, the greater we experience grief when we lose those that we love. Although my body has aged and I may not be as quick to process and react, I can still be a valuable resource for the next generation if given a chance. Those who take advantage of my experience can learn from them and not make the same mistakes I did, giving more time to explore new opportunities. I hope you get to experience the gift of aging and become a senior. Next time you meet a senior, instead of seeing what they have lost over time, think of all you can learn from them. Think of seniors in a wheelchair as wisdom sitting in a chair, and take advantage of all they have to share. If we work together, hand in hand, we can make this world a better place. Remember, I'm not done yet. So it is open up for questions. If anyone has questions, you can ask now, or, you know, I'll be around afterwards too.
I have a couple.
The whole life team.
Mm-hmm. And it's the short term that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they'll be able to tell you how they met their spouse or how long they've been married or all about their children's birth, but they won't be able to tell you what they had for dinner last night. Okay? No, dementia is an umbrella term. Everything falls under dementia. Alzheimer's, you can still have some problems. When you work with dementia, there is no way to say if you have Alzheimer's, you're going to have this, this, and this. If you have PICS, you have this, this, and this. But typically, with a frontal temporal dementia, you have more of the aggressive behaviors. They can still have paranoia. You know, you stole my purse. What did you do with my purse? You know, they can still have some of that. It all depends on what part of the brain is attacked. And that's different for everyone. So that's why sometimes pastors of churches start cursing like sailors. And their wife says, I didn't even know he knew those words. Well, that's not their husband. That's the disease talking.
So then normal memory loss, like when my daughter says, Mom, you told me that already. That's okay.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue yet.
No, no. No.
I haven't left my keys in the refrigerator.
No, no. Forgetfulness is normal with aging. Dementia is not. Okay?
So it needs to be evaluated by a neurologist.
If you suspect that it's a type of dementia, yes, it should be evaluated. There are medications like Namenda and stuff that a lot of people with dementia will be put on. That doesn't make their memory better, but it will level them off for a longer period of time before you see a decline. So there are some medications that they can use with that, but there are some side effects that, you know, some people just don't want to use it. So it just depends. And as soon as you see the decline, you might as well take them off because it's lost its value.
I'm sitting there thinking, what did I do? I just feel a greater sensitivity to anybody that is dealing with dementia, and I just thank you for increasing my sensitivity.
And that's what the purpose of this exercise is. Right, right. And that's the whole purpose of this, because if we can take head knowledge is wonderful, but if we can make it heart knowledge to understand what they're going through, then we're going to approach them differently. Now, does anybody here have a loved one in assisted living or looking to go in? Okay, I've got a piece of paper I want to give you all.
Mine's not assisted, long-term care.
Okay, but this is specifically assisted living. I'm dealing with an issue right now with assisted living facility where a client's mother died in November. Like November 22nd, November 25th, they had all the stuff out of her room. The facility charged her for all of December. And I've gone to battle for that. And we wound up bringing the state in and hotlined it and got Social Security. And unfortunately, it's a loophole in the law, and they were allowed to do that. So I've got a document that I've typed up that I'm hitting all over social media. You may see me on the news coming soon discussing this. So if you have someone or you're looking for an assisted living possibility, get one of these from me. You've got my email and my card there. If you ever need it, I'll send it to you because it tells you how to avoid that from happening to you. Any other questions?
I'm surprised that you say that dementia is not normal. Is that mm-hmm. just you're just differing? Isn't it true that a third of people age 85 or older will have dementia?
More and more people are getting dementia, but dementia is a devastating illness just like cancer or anything else. It is not what you should typically expect to happen to you. Now, if your mother had it and your grandmother had it and it's all down your line, you will probably, you could very well get it. And the longer you live, the more likely you will have some dementia, but it's still not normal. It's not the way it's supposed to be. Many, many people in their 80s, 90, over 100 do not have any dementia at all. They are sharp as a tack. So it is not they will tell you it is not a normal part of aging, but we're seeing it more and more. And a lot of people are thinking lifestyle and environmental things are causing more and more people to get it. And you can see all kinds of things online where they're telling you to do these brain exercises and things to prevent it. And so there's so much research, but it is not normal. It's just like you don't normally expect to get cancer. You don't normally expect to get Parkinson's. Dementia is the same way. We don't normally expect to get it.
So if you have a loved one that is combating, so were you suggesting not to medicate?
You may need to, but okay, she said, if you have a loved one who's combative, am I suggesting not to medicate? What I'm suggesting is to try other things first. You know, when are they combative? Are they combative when you're trying to get them to do something? And when they're alone and no one's bothering them, they're fine. Well, that tells you something right there. They just don't like the approach. So, but there are times that you still have to resort to medication, but you try the non-pharmacological stuff first. And if that doesn't work, then you may need to, because there could be some mental illness and things involved in it too. They can often go hand in hand. So it doesn't mean you never do. You just want to cross off all the boxes. You don't want that to be your first resort, okay? And you may just need to contact a really good case manager, geriatric case manager, or dementia specialist to help walk you through that. Yes.
So when my father-in-law was in his 70s, he had what we considered normal memory loss, where he'd forget people's names, just events, like he didn't know what he had for dinner last night or whatever. But when he would drive somewhere and then call us up and say, I forgot how to get home, mm-hmm. and it was a familiar place, mm-hmm. That's when we figured he kind of crossed over into dementia. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the fact that, you know, he couldn't remember what he had for dinner last night. Or it could even be breakfast in the morning or lunch 2 hours ago. Those are more signs of short-term memory loss, which is indicative of Alzheimer's, which is the most common type of dementia. So, and the thing is, people generally have dementia or Alzheimer's for maybe 10 years before they're ever diagnosed. It's a very slow progressing disease. So you may see little red flags here. Really, the first red flag that I notice with people is when you see notes all over their house to remind them to do things. And now, I'm not saying you guys have it, but then when you forget where the notes are, or you forget what the notes mean, you've got this great note, but what was I thinking when I wrote this note? Then you've got more significant problems. And I will tell you, one thing you can try is if a loved one does not know who you are, if you go in there and they don't recognize you, take a picture of yourself 5 years younger and show it to them. And they say, well, there's my daughter. What did you do with her? You know? And if they don't remember 5 years younger, go back 10 years. Because at some point, they're going to know. That's a great activity to do with people with dementia, is to go through photo albums and stuff and trigger those memories and let them talk about it. Yes?
I don't have a question, but I want to tell you about my mother. She lived to be 97, sharp as a tack, and she always said, I don't think it'd be so bad to have Alzheimer's. You wouldn't know you had it.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was taken to the hospital at the end, my brother and I had gotten her to sign a DNR because we knew she wouldn't like all the tubes. They took her in on the gurney, and she sat up straight and said, give me all you got.
And people ask that a lot. They say, is it worse to have dementia or to have physical disabilities? I think it's worse for families when it's dementia. It's worse on the individual when it's physical disabilities. Because like you said, you forget that you have dementia. The worst part of dementia is the first stage, because you know that you don't remember and you're doing everything you can to hide it. But at some point, you cross that line and you no longer know that you don't know. Everyone else knows you don't know. But then that's when it becomes harder on them. Yes?
Does playing games and cards and working puzzles, does that help?
That's very good stuff to do. She asked if like playing games and puzzles and stuff helped. Very good. With my mom, we play games 3 times a week. And we play Farkle. Oh, well, it's called it's called Farkle. But she doesn't like that word because it sounds too close to something else. So she's labeled it Sparkle. So we play Sparkle. And she loves card games. We'll play different card games. And she's just like a 5-year-old throwing the dice. And she just comes to life because when she was growing up, her family played games a lot. Older folks, you know, families were much more active and did things together. So one thing her family does play get cards and games. So we play games a lot with her, and she loves it. She loves it. So that's a really good thing to do.
I know a couple of people. We've had a couple instances at church here that the people that were younger, say in their 50s and 60s, that got dementia, and they progressed very rapidly.
Mm-hmm, Usually if it's younger, you get it younger, the hereditary does progress more rapidly. And that's a good point. If, like in a church, if somebody starts to have a, episode, you know, you get very agitated or something, if somebody who has memory issues, and you might be in a Sunday school class or, you know, anywhere, the first thing you need to do is have everyone else leave the room. Because what's happening is they're overstimulated by everything going on, and they can't follow all the conversations and all the people. There's too much going on for them. So have everyone else leave the room. And then if they're not a danger to themselves or others, just let them sit down and calm down. If they are, then have one person be with them and just that they know and kind of talk them down. But a lot of times when they get really agitated and things, they're overstimulated. So reduce the stimuli, and then you may very well see a calming effect. Yes?
I'm going to go with my sister, and she's in a nursing facility. And you said early on in your presentation about someone is always the one that's the trouble.
Uh-huh.
And so I have become that person to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to step back and let the other sisters do the visiting. I still go, but I usually don't speak or...
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a lot of times she thinks she's a sister that's already passed.
Mm-hmm.
And me sitting there, because we just felt for her and her emotions or whatever, because she gets very combative sometimes, that I've had to, like, not be there.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to visit with her.
Mm-hmm.
So I go, but not let her know where I am.
Mm-hmm. So what she's saying is her mom's in the facility and
sister,
and she can get very, she's the bad guy, just like I'm the bad guy with my mom. So she doesn't visit as often, and she lets her sisters do that, which is a really good way to do it. But unfortunately, a lot of times, other family members aren't nearly as involved. And
you're... I've had to educate my other sisters and explain to them.
And they were willing to do that. So that is a great solution. And you've got my email. If you ever need to just brainstorm, just email me, okay? Because I'm really good at brainstorming. I've seen a lot in 27 years. But never say you've seen everything, because as soon as you do, I remember when I first started as an advocate, I read the federal and state law. I read the state law weekly, which is not real exciting reading. And I read the federal law once a month. So I was all ready to go visit residents. This is when I first worked with the ombudsman. So I went in and sat down with a young man, and he was just saying how awful his life was, you know, in the home. And I said, well, you know, you have all these rights. And I said, you know, and he said, well, yeah, but I lost all my constitutional rights. I said, you never lose your constitutional rights, and you have all these additional rights. He said, so you're telling me, as an American citizen, I have not lost my constitutional rights being a resident. And so I said, you never lose your rights as an American citizen. He said, great. I want to keep a gun in my room.
Whoa!
Wow. Now, he had allowed me to dig my hole, okay, really deep. So I thought, Oh, well, okay. So I actually had to wind up calling Department of Health and Senior Services, getting their legal team to give me an explanation why he couldn't keep a gun. So then he wanted to keep it in the administrator's office, which he couldn't do either. So, yeah, you never say black and white, yes, you can or no, you can't, because there's always going to be that one case. And that was, I hadn't even been an advocate for a month when he did that to me. So,
I'm leaving this job.
I tell ya. Yes.
Other than games and doing puzzles and stuff, what about sports activities and like dancing and stuff like that?
Dancing is excellent because dancing helps with balance. Now, I told some people here, my mom was walking backwards the other day and fell, and I told her, you can't walk backwards till you master walking forwards, but someone told her to walk backwards. But dancing, there are some doctors that when seniors come to their appointments, they dance with them so they can gauge their balance. So dance, and music is huge, huge. There are people with dementia who will not say a word, and if you turn on music from their generation, they'll get up and sing and dance. And I did that with a client of mine, and the staff walked in and said, we didn't know she could talk. And she's just dancing and singing because music is a different part of the brain. So a lot of times when people don't react to anything, music will connect with them. Also pets, animals. There's a facility in St. Louis County, NHC Maryland Heights, that's an Eden home. And part of the Eden philosophy is pets. So I never know what I'm going to see when I go there. There has been peacocks, pot-bellied pigs, donkeys, llamas, turkeys, birds all over the place. So you never know what they're going to have. But animals are like that too. Animals, a lot of people will open up with animals. But on the flip side, there are people that don't want the animals around. Like, I'm allergic to cats, so don't put me in a room with a cat lady, because that's not going to work. So, other questions?
Did you say that hearing loss is not affected by dementia?
No, it is.
It is.
Because if you're not hearing what I'm saying, you're not going to respond correctly, because you're mishearing the question. So, yeah, you really, that's the first thing you check is make, if they have hearing aids, do they have batteries in, are they working? So you can rule out that they're not hearing the question, okay? Same with glasses. Make sure that if they haven't had their eyes checked in 10 years, maybe it's time. Okay, you all have my business card. It has my email, so you can call or you can email me anytime. My website is on there, and there's an Ask Cheryl button on there. She's got my book here. And again, my book is really good for people. If you know someone who's in a long-term care community, or this is written on the federal law, so assisted living don't have to follow federal law, but there's only a handful of laws that are just federal. Most state laws are covered in there, too. So it's a great book for anyone, whether assisted living or skilled.
And that's available for purchase if you guys are interested. Cheryl's going to be back January 21st. It's going to be the second part of this presentation. And do you want to tell
us? So when I come back in January, we specifically picked January because people will have had time to go visit relatives that they may not have seen over the holidays, and they may come home thinking, oh, when I talk to Grandma and she tells me that she's doing wonderful and I saw her on Thanksgiving, she's not doing as wonderful as she's telling me. So when I come back in January, we're going to talk about what happens when you make the decision that we need more help. And that might mean a home health company. That may mean adult daycare, or that may mean assisted living or long-term care. So I'm going to talk about how to select a facility, how to determine what level of care you need, how to pay for it, because it's not cheap, and what you need to know.
Well, thank you so much for being
If you want to get a book and you would like me to sign it, I can sign them too. So thank you for having me, and